Welcome back. I'm Kelly.
This is Braden.
I'm Braden.
This is episode 35. It's a good start. This is episode 35 of the Slide In Podcast.
35 episode is going to be Kelly not fidgeting.
You're right.
It's unreal.
You guys taking bets at home?
I watched one of our videos. Jesus, I like got Tourette's disease or something.
Something.
You know, we got swearing in the... Swearing and bouncing around. I've already got to start. There, see.
There you go. Yeah, thank God I'm in the squeaky chair, huh? So we've got a lot of good stuff for you today. One question that we kind of talked a little bit about, but bumped away. So we'll get into that this episode. We've got some housekeeping stuff to take care of. One of which, I wanted to start an episode with putting something on the wall behind Kelly, and hopefully he accepts this. I was just back in Seattle and got to see my grandparents, and they're moving out of their house. So he's cleaning out stuff right now.
Montana.
What?
Bucktail.
Nope. Yeah. Nope. Now it might be cooler. I don't know. He says Hoover, which is what he called me because I had one really good game at second base in seventh grade, where I was like a Hoover vacuum. Hoover card for boss. He says, I met John Wayne at a Sigma Chi event.
It's up.
It is a signed, good luck, John Wayne.
It's up forever.
So there, throw that up there. Holy I don't know if you shit. Want the note with it, too, from Touchdown Tommy. Tommy, a big guy in the Sigma Chi world. He's a very proud fraternity man.
Yeah, don't care about that as much as I care about. Although I like Touchdown Tommy. I watched him. But that's got to go up on the John Wayne thing. Okay. Now I'm afraid to move it.
Well, we'll get it up there. We'll get it up there for next show. But yeah, thought that was pretty cool. Thanks, Touchdown Tommy.
Oh, Touchdown gave it to him?
No, Touchdown Tommy's what we call my grandpa.
Oh, I thought you meant
Thomas Baker.
I thought you meant the kid in Bozeman.
No, sorry.
Just got drafted in the NFL.
Oh, really? Okay, all right. No, this Touchdown Tommy's 94, lives in Tacoma, Washington.
We should tell the other Touchdown.
We should tell the other Touchdown. He stole somebody's name. All right. Another housekeeping thing is Dallas Myers came into the shop. He was on a guide trip with Nate yesterday. Him and his wife came in.
What's that? Unbelievable artist.
Dallas?
His wife.
Really?
And sculptor.
No way.
Spent an hour with him at the other shop.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Great people.
Oh, just a total blast.
I heard they were cousins with Darren Calhoun, who we were just down there with on the wind. I asked him, I was like, oh, you're Darren's cousin. He goes, buddy, when you live on the reservation, you're related to everyone.
Well, his wife came in. I've got, this is Shedhorn Sports Mouse. That's our dog. And I was telling her about the dog and the bottles and all the stuff they're doing for Rendezvous. Mm-hmm. And then he says, oh, you should see her paintings. And she starts, I'm like, oh, my
no
God.
Way.
I said, I'm looking at this chick going, what? Holy shit. I mean, and then she goes, oh, I like sculptures, too. And she just starts going through all these sculptures. It's like, oh, my God.
So does she sell her work?
Yeah.
All right, we'll find somewhere.
Yeah, no, it is. It's very high end. But
so what Dallas was telling me about is he is the head of a nonprofit, I believe, mm-hmm. in Wyoming called Wyo Wonders. And they create a curriculum for second to fifth graders to really teach them about kind of outdoor stewardship through mm-hmm. tourism and recreation.
Yep.
So go support. You can donate at...
Do we have a thing to put it up?
Yeah. Their matching thing expires today, which you won't see this for a week, unfortunately. But I'll throw something up there. Donate at YO Gives. YWO is what that is. And it's cool stuff. I mean, they're trying to teach the youth while they still have moldable minds about taking care of the outdoors, and that's really good stuff. So
yeah, and unique.
Yeah, it is.
And they get a lot of support because they do good things.
They do. They do for sure. All right, let's see if we had anything else. Streamer School, that was our other laundry item we had to take care of. I think we still have some spots open.
In the fourth one or something.
Yeah, so check out Streamer School. Really cool opportunity. We talked about it before. Kelly and our guides will teach you how to streamer fish. So actually, this is how we should run ads for it. Do you suck at streamer fishing? Change that.
Suck just a little less.
Streamer School.
Yes.
There's also whiskey there. Helps.
Lots.
All right, so the question we're going to get into was from Blackheart3A. Like I said, I mentioned this on a podcast, I think 2 weeks ago, and then forgot about it. I move pretty fast. Really appreciate the podcast. Looking forward to every Tuesday. Forgive me if this topic has been covered. But how do you all sort your flies in boxes, dries, nymphs, streamers, etc.? So Kelly brought over.
We read this before, right?
We read it, but we didn't go into it. Yeah,
we said we would. And he called us out and said, "You guys are just dicks and didn't do what you said."
Bunch of assholes. You didn't ask my question.
Yeah,
answer.
Nice. I'm gonna go get a box and come right back. Okay, I don't want to go crazy on this one because it's just two people's idea how this gets done. But I'm going to tell you how I do mine a little bit. I've changed over the last 10 years. I used to be psycho about organization in the boxes, like still like that, but everything had to be in its place, right? And I used a lot of different types of boxes then. But in my dries and nymphs, I used all these CF box style with the slip foam, which probably can't see that.
I'll just
put three flies in this box. I think everybody knows what they are.
So will you give a brief description to the people who aren't watching what that box looks like?
A slip foam is just soft foam, and there's two types. There's this the softer foam, and then there's the I didn't bring that box over evidently. There's the other types that are a kind of a hard latex type stuff. I don't like those as much because I have trouble getting the flies in. These CFs are just great. They slide in. Doc Ellis he'd walk with these things and he'd have 1,000 flies with them. Every single slot had a fly in it, yep. Right? Every time. And he would just pull them out and replace them, tie them as they used them up. And they're really neat. I mean, they're really easy to compartmentize. You know, you got your dry, you got your done spinners, emergers, whatever you want to do, you know, all duns, all spinners, all. And I like the smaller ones, but I'm a vest guy, right? And so I don't really like the giant ones that I have to put, you know, if I'm using, in the rare occasion I use a fanny pack, I just find it a pain in the ass. But so I don't usually go giant on these. But I've kind of went backwards. And I don't think there's any better way than this slip foam to have a truly organized. And these things don't come out. They do not. You drop it. Maybe 1 out of 100 will move, but not very often. It's a great way to get started. There must be 100 different fly boxes. I mean, what was the one? A Good Day or something like that. They're just all these names for them. So some of them got compartments in them for split shots. Some of them got, one side's dry, one side's wet, blah, blah, blah.
Some of them have the magnets.
Yeah,
the little open-face magnet deals.
I personally,
there's 1,000 ways to do it.
If you're at the point where you need 5 fly boxes, you don't need to listen to this, right? You've already figured out your deal. I've kind of went backward. I've always loved these little tiny, I've got a little 6-compartment or 8-compartment, fly box, clear. I've always loved these. I mean, I've got, 50 flies in here, 60, and they're just super easy for that small. I can put them in my vest pocket very easily. Did you want a picture of that thing?
Yeah, I just want to get it.
And so I kind of went backwards. And when I was a kid, we all used these style boxes, which are clear. No, they weren't all clear. My favorite one in the old days was the Cortland's. Oh, shit. I don't remember what they called it, but it had green felt on the bottom. And you could see your flies in it really well.
Solid backdrop to look at them.
Yeah. It was really neat. And I have kind of gone, like with this box, it's a lot of traditional stuff. You can see it. They've got round bottoms on them. And so you can... I kind of went backwards. I used to just have to have all my flies in there, and I would always take them. I have a drying box where I'd only put them in and blah, blah, blah. I kind of went back because I'm not running as many flies as I used to. It was nothing for me because of Doc Ellis's influence to walk to the river on a night like tonight when I know I'm going to go fish. I'm going to see a caddis for about an hour, and then I'm going to fish EPO or spinners for the rest of the night. I don't need the entire... from nymphal, three different stages of emerger.
To sunk to spinner.
To a in the shuck cripple, to a done, to a full knockdown cripple, to a spinner.
Yep.
I'm taking five flies with me.
Right.
You know, I don't give a, I just don't. So, but I kind of dig it. It's kind of going back in time. And you're seeing, I see quite a few people using those now. And I don't know why, my nymphs, I have a hard time not having compartmentized. And in particular, like if you're a Euro trasher, it is so easy to take those boxes and put, I don't remember who showed me, probably, I saw, it might have been Richie Strollis, it might have been, I forget who had one, and it had 3, 5, 3, 2, 2, 5, so yes. And the bead sizes.
Yep.
And they went across when you have the boxes like the slip foam, but they were the thin profile ones. So they were marked on the edge.
Yeah.
It was that clear box that really cheap box that we sell.
Yep.
That I have all my nymphs in. Mm-hmm. I really like those. I like the fact that the nymphs are in there. I still like to dry them, but I can put them back in there. And it's very organized. And with my nymphs, I like to see the colors and the shades and everything I want. It's not like the dries are, I might have 10 nymphs for every bug, and I got 2 for the adult. Mm-hmm. So in the nymph world, which we do here, I still use those boxes right on the edges, what size beads they are, or on the front. Like Skinny, one of our guides, used to, when he left, he gave me all his boxes, and they had tape by color. And it had, you know, caddis on it.
Yeah.
He writes like a freaking typewriter.
Really?
And so I've kept his boxes forever. But they're so organized. So, but that's just, like I said, I'm assuming when somebody's, if you're at this stage, you know, once you figure out how you like it, you like it. Just, for me, it's just, I'm culling back on my dry nymph thing. And then we go into the, and on a lake box, I carry one of these, and that's pretty much it.
So I think it might be valuable, real quick, to talk about the different stages people go through with fly boxes. Because oftentimes, like when you start out, when I started fishing, I had one fly box, and I went and bought, I had a dozen flies in it or something.
I know my progression, box to that box.
You've got it. Yeah, exactly. Yes. You start with a small box. And then, you know, you slowly move up, and then ultimately you'll get to a stage where you, like, where I'm at with my streamers right now. You know, I've got a lot of dry flies, hoppers. I have one box of nymphs. I don't do that much.
I brought a picture of those boxes, but go ahead. I'm sorry.
So with my streamers, what I do right now is I basically have a reservoir of bugs. And sometimes they're in big boxes like these, the Cliff boxes, the MFC boxes. And then whenever they work their way out of there, they're in pucks and everything else, very disorganized. But I essentially have a reservoir of bugs that I will go in and pick out the ones I want, mm-hmm. and then put them in a box for a day,
yeah.
right? When I know here's where I'm going to be fishing, I want to have, you know, a couple profiles colored, all my colors and a couple different sizes, you know, and bring maybe right. 2 dozen flies with me. So you get to a point where you have way too many bugs, especially in the streamer game. Like if Kelly's going waiting, he doesn't have one of these giant boxes, right? So you can do the same thing with your dry flies and your nymphs, and that's where it's imperative to be incredibly well organized. So that when Kelly says, I'm going to go fish EPRS mayflies and the rusty spinners this evening, then he can pull out his rusty box, pull 5 flies out of it, throw them in a puck or whatever.
And that's kind of how this used to be with these, the old Plano boxes, right? Or whatever, the big ones, right? And I would put them in there. And when that slip foam, the CF Design was the first one, I think, that did this. This kind of, and there's just a bajillion sizes of these boxes. I mean, just.
Oh, it is a pain in the ass filling online orders because they have so many. We carry like 70 different types of them.
And that's because everybody's got their own gig, right? Yeah. I'm still a vest cat. I'm never getting rid of my vest. If anybody's got a size large Patagonia, the tan one, that is relatively new, I want to buy it from you.
Relatively new.
Well, I mean,
this was from like 1982.
Oh, I have pictures of mine 30 some years ago. It's not that it's still, it works great because everything's where it belongs. It's actually functionally designed for your tippets and everything else. But the Velcro's so shot, I should probably just have Shirley sew some Velcro on it. I got a feeling one of these days it's just going to go poof and eviscerate right off my back. It's just that.
What was the story? This is a total tangent. What was the story I overheard you telling somebody the other day about? It might have been somebody from Sims designing a vest.
Yeah.
What was that? You want to tell our folks?
Well, it was when I got it, a vest should have a purpose, right? This is a tangent. We're on the other.
This is what we do.
It was a vest should have a purpose. So like, and it should start at the top and work its way down on purpose. Like by design, you're trying to optimize your time out there. You don't want to spend an extra 30 seconds every time you go looking for shit, right? And it's not there anyway because you don't have any organizational skills and you just got shit everywhere, right? So a vest should start up here where like things like floating, things like that should go, right? And it should have a pocket that will fit said such item because there's only so many sizes of that item.
Yes.
And then it should work its way down. I like my tippets on the bottom. I prefer to have my tippets on my left side. Mm-hmm. That's just tippet. And then I like to have my top pocket. They're usually split. I like to have my leaders up here. I don't use them. I've always got a dozen different ones with me. I never use them. Once I'm there, never is a big word. Seldom do I go out there and say, oh shit, I'm going to put a new leader on. Right. But there's things where it goes, like these two up here are just for me, are floating leader, desiccants and things like that. And maybe a bug repellent patch or what do you call it? You know, those little wipe things. And then as I move down, I want a box in here for the bigger size box, just slightly bigger than this one, longer, like this, right? I need two boxes with me. And then I want the tippet on the outside, and then I got another box down here for the smaller, thinner boxes. And then they usually have one that slides in. For that rare occasion when you say, I'm going to take like a streamer box, a bigger one, right? But I can just like, poof, 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 poof. And when I'm all done, I can easily have six fly boxes, everything else I need in there. But back when this vest was designed, there was basically Millstream fly boxes in two sizes. And there was two types of tippet, period, end of discussion. There were no other size tippet spools. And that's why these pockets are imperative that the ones you establish are going to be for tippet, which you only need two because you can put three spools in each one beautifully, right? And then there was only, essentially at that point, there weren't more than four different sizes fly boxes. Mm-hmm. And two of them were dominating the world. So you should build your vest around those products.
You should.
And they get there, and I'm trying to figure out, they sent me a vest.
Oh, we forgot to do the phone thing. Pause. Because you said they sent you a vest.
So they sent me this vest, and I'm going through it. Now, we know that the boxes are all the same, and the tippet side, there's Maxima, and then there was every other spool in the world, right? So I start trying to put stuff in it, and I finally called the owner. I'm like, or no, he called me. Did you get your vest? Yeah. Really nice looking. I like it. I said, I can't figure it out. What do you mean you can't figure it out? I said, well, can't figure it out. I got trying to get the pockets, things in the pockets, and it looks really cool, but the tippet pocket was too small for the one size and too big for the other, and only one box I could get in a, and I'm just going all around. He goes, well, let me have you call the gal who designed it. And I'm thinking, oh, cool. And mind you that back then they were 300 yards from River's Edge Fly Shop, which was one of the biggest shops in, Montana then. And I said, get the gal on the phone. I said, hey, how you doing? She's good, good. And she goes, how do you like your vest? And I said, it's really cool looking. I said, she goes, how do you like it? And I said, well, can't figure it out. She goes, well, what do you mean? I said, well, I've got these boxes and these tippets, and I sell all these in my store, but I can't get any where they belong, right? And I'm
square peg and round hole.
Yeah, things are not working. And like rounded edges so that a square box doesn't go down.
Right.
And it was not really. And
purpose
I said,
designed.
Yeah, I said, well, I can't get the tippets, or they just fall out of the big ones. And I'm going back and forth. And I said, I said, you know, it just doesn't, did it. She says, well, what if, you know, how did, I said, how'd you come up with it? She goes, it looked good. I said, I get it, but it did occur to you to go up to River's Edge, just take a break and go up and say, what do you put in the vest? Right? As opposed to just making one that looked good. I just didn't dig it, right? And so it's just it's a tangent.
But sorry, tangent.
Yeah, vest, I'm a vest cat. And so, but now a lot of people, but I understand their vests are coming back. So hopefully somebody will build a good one again. But there, but back to the fly boxes thing. We used to do this storage thing in these boxes and then put them into here. I loved that when that happened. Uh-huh. And the idea was that you would kind of, but eventually I started doing these.
I've got a bunch of those folding mill. They're like the old Plano ones. Where it's just, you know, compartments. And you just pick them out of there.
Yeah, well, that's what those are. Yeah. And I kind of gravitated back. I used to, only because Doc Ellis did it, it was nothing, like I said, to see him show up with four swing leaves in his vest. That's 1,000 flies.
That's incredible.
And they're all perfect.
Yeah.
Mine aren't all perfect. So I just wanted to borrow Doc's boxes. You know? Yeah. Doc, can I take this when I do a seminar? So moving along, the tangent. So then, but the streamer game is a little different. And it's changing for me too. I don't carry near as many flies as we used to. And I just counted these. I have 20. I used to travel in my boat with 25 of these. Mm-hmm. And these are swing leafs. I don't think this one is, but yeah, it is. So these are swing leafs, so it doubles you, right? But how I do it now, and I'll show you.
Real quick, I got another tangent, short one. When I was up on the mow with John, he runs a fly pod. And I was like, so how do you like the fly pod? He goes, well, I know Kelly designed it. I've got two problems with it. He said one problem with it. He goes, the bench, or the, you know, the compartments along the edge, so they're about 2 inches too wide. I said, I know why he did that. He goes, why? Well, he wanted to carry 20 of those MFC boxes in them, and they're good for taking a nap.
It was most...
Oh, it all makes sense.
It's a nap thing was really big, but it was...
Yeah.
So how I... It's very true. And that... But I, even in the fly pod, I can't get these in them. And so I couldn't get... I couldn't get as many as I wanted. So what I... And this isn't one. This is... Well, it is. It's got pretty depleted. What I do now is I keep these big boxes. Doesn't matter what kind of box it is. I use these because with the swing, and I, if you go, and I'll show you a picture. I took, every one of them's labeled, right? Like this one is barely in Willie's, right? It's barely legals and Willie's. And so in here is theoretically nothing but that. There's a few other ones, randoms in there because I jammed them in there just for fun. And so what I do is I take that, and now I've gone into these new boxes, which are still prototypes. These are still some of the prototypes. And what I do is I do two ways. So like when we were shooting that show, whatever we were a million years ago, this box was everything I thought I might take in a day. But it's nothing specific, right? It was just like everything in this box. It's like I wanted a fat head. I wanted every kind of boogie, and I wanted every dungeon. But I don't have many. I got two.
Was this the show with Bill?
Yeah.
So I was laughing editing this because I'm going through it, and you say, I didn't even bring that many flies. I really pared down my fly selection here. I only brought these three boxes, and you still have 600 flies with you.
Oh, easy. Yeah, but I mean, it goes, that goes from...
I really came down skinny. I didn't bring much.
But that goes from 6,000, right? And so this isn't, this is my, everything I own, like every fly, if I never, there might not be every size, but there's, what I'm going to fish for sure is in one of these.
Yep.
And then this drying, this is prototype, so this drying box was more, this was bait fish, so... This is just bait fish and bigger bait fish. Everything is pared down to, but it's pared down to like threes and fours, right? So I don't have, that's full of them. When this thing's full, I've got 150, 200 slick willies and barely legal.
Six of every size.
Yeah, six of everything. Maybe like on a brown trout slick willie, I might have 24 in here.
Yeah.
But that's, all to go all summer off of that, they're all fall, whatever. Yep. out of that box. And so I keep storage boxes. How you do that's up to you. The one thing that one of my favorite things on the planet, which I don't have over here, I keep it at my house because it's kind of one of my favorite fly boxes ever was a leather. My mom got it for me for Christmas. It's a leather roll.
With the wool on the inside.
Not a roll. It's just a single flap and a lid.
No, so with the wool?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you said roll. So yeah, no, it's the wool. I dig them. I love them. Total old school. Rots the shit out of your hooks.
Yep.
It stains your flies. Mm-hmm. Not good, right? They're not good. Great for muddlers.
Soul.
Huh?
Has soul.
Has soul.
Has soul.
And when I go out, like when I get pissed off at the world and I want the whole world to blow up and their AI bullshit, I take that leather case out. I put a dozen streamers in it. And I defrag, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I smell the leather. And it's like, oh, I love the smell of this shit. Thing's got to be 45 years old. And I just dig it. But it's not functional, right? There's a big difference. And there's a lot of cats that run those. I mean, you want to see something really cool? Go look at leather, like custom leather fly boxes.
Yeah.
And these, all the, you know, the carvings on them and it's just incredible. And then they got felt leaves in them. That's one way to do it. And I really like that, but it's from a functional standpoint. Nowadays, people are really moving fast. They all want to get there in a hurry. And the plastic boxes, they dry your fly better. That's one thing about the slip foam. They dry your fly. I've never had a slip foam, maybe one that I left for 5 years or something, but like it rusts my hooks out. Anything like that. So
what I always do is I open that box up and throw it on my dash.
Yeah, that's all you got to do.
Yeah.
And it's with streamers and you put them in something and you clean it. That's what this is. For those of you who can't see, I've got a 12 by 12 fly box, which is a new prototype. It's going to be out in about 2 months. It has a drying block on top, right? And so this was
My drying block is just foam with slots in it.
Yeah. Doesn't matter
it's just open to the air, not
this
in the
box. This is a show we shot. This were the flies we fished that day, right? Other than those three little muddlers. And so it's totally up to you. Those boxes, if I wasn't using the box, for those who aren't watching, it's a 12 by 12 square, 2.5 inches deep. I use the bugger barn. The Cliff Bugger Barn, or the Plano, whatever the other one was that you couldn't get for a while. But I really like the Cliff Bugger Barn. And what I do if I'm not, even when I go in my boat and I'm going to pare down and try to be super conservative and only take 400 flies with me, I will still shove two more, three more boxes. I'll just run to the garage. I do it every time. Yep. I go to the garage. I go get those.
Just a couple more.
Yeah, there's just three of those Bugger Barns that I keep. Like one's just got woolly sculpins and cougars in it, and they're even going to be in there, but I just can't quite leave without them.
Yep.
Right? In case we jump out of the boat and I want to run somewhere,
uh-huh.
Right?
Yep.
Or if I have to barter for my life or something.
Yeah, right.
It's just, but that's, I mean, it's one way to do it.
There's a lot of
ways. Dude, there are so many super organized cats out there. Skinny was the best. I mean, but he was a nymph and streamer guy, his streamers were still pretty damn organized. But everybody has, I see people do all kinds of stuff. I've seen guys with those they've got all kinds of these. I saw a guy in a boat the other day at the landing, had one of those, and each one of them had a compartment. I think like most of them are for screws and bits and stuff like that. He had all kinds of shit in it.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like,
yeah.
Oh, that's really cool.
Like the multi-level toolboxes.
Like I need another freaking Milwaukee case, like 40 of them. And so there's just a million ways to do it. But if you have the presence of mind to realize that it's not just, you know, you should have a pretty good idea what you're going for, right? You shouldn't have to take every fly you own.
Right. Well, it depends on your level, right?
Right.
There's probably a lot of people listening to this that it's not hard for them to take every fly they
have. For that person that is still like, your harvest is less than 100 flies, I'd say get two of those. I would say get two swing leaves.
Yep.
Or two.
The CNF design.
Not swing leaves. Just the one that has the bigger, the next one size, you know, it's like 6 or 8 inches long. If you got two of those and you are still at that point where you're going to carry 12 streamers, you know, your selection is 12 streamers, and you're going to have attractors and mayflies and caddis, you can do it all in two boxes really easy.
Yep.
Especially with the organization you can get with that slip foam. And you can see, and it makes it really easy. I've even seen people that write the sizes underneath the, on the foam, right? Like, I could see Matt doing that, you know, a little laser beam.
I'm pretty sure he does.
I wouldn't be, I could see it. They're going right across like 12, you know, 14, 16, 18, 20. And then three of each or whatever, whatever your thing is, whatever it's, whatever it is, you know. And you would get a whole, it's a way to keep you really organized and understand. Howard is going to be here. He's here now. He got here yesterday. But we're going to shoot a podcast.
Howard Croston.
And he is next week, right? We did a podcast with him. I'm sure it is. And then we do the shoot with him. And so I'm sure he will be the same way. The organizational portion of it isn't necessarily just to be anal about your fly organization. You should have an idea. It helps you to see that if you understand your day starts with the emergence or the pupation, if your flies are going to start, well, in some respects, it could start with a spinnerfall. But for the most part, you're going to say your bugs are going to hatch in the morning throughout the day. And you can set your flies for your how that works. Mm-hmm. And you're not guessing like, is that an emerger or is that a, I wonder what that one is. You have just enough to say it takes you through and you can go by hatches. And you can then leave, if with a big CNF, you can get 200 flies in a box.
Easy.
You can carry everything you need.
If you can't get them with those flies.
You probably ain't getting it. Especially in the Perdigon world now where nobody really runs emergent stuff. Although I saw a pretty good run of people buying regular 16 three dips this week. Mm. So somebody's figured out that you got to have a fly higher, which is good.
Okay, so you know what's funny is I was just talking to Parker yesterday, and he's going down to the Nymph, the boat ramp. And he goes, I've got this new thing I'm doing. Like, what's that? He goes, every day after I get off the water, if my folks are nymphing, I take my client rod exactly how I set it up for them, and I go nymph it. If I can't get one, then I'm in trouble. then I was probably using the wrong bugs. And he had a 16 and an 18 dip.
That there. Can't beat it. Yeah. I mean, it's just like, but it's a, I encourage people. I was talking to George Daniels. I think we were doing a podcast together. And he was talking about how he won't teach. George is one of the greatest anglers ever. And he runs, I don't know if he runs all of the fly fishing thing at Penn State or a big portion of it. I know he does the fly. But he doesn't allow his students to, like in the fly tying, there's no Perdigon tying.
And he's like the Perdigon king.
Dude. I think he's written at least one, if not two, books on it. And he's great, right?
He's written a ton of books.
He doesn't. I mean, I'm fishing that style, and kind of one of the godfathers in the U.S. about it, right? And we got talking about that. Who's the asshole that left his phone on here? Me, Big A. But we got talking about it how. We grew up speaking Latin and knowing every single, you know how many segments is on a bug and you know how many legs everyone's gotten. Why is them one this way? And you build all these flies to crawl up through the water or pupate and wiggle its butt or whatever you did, right? But you knew every portion of it. And so your flies were associated and you took great pride in knowing that at 1 o'clock that, you know, between 11 and 1, that Hendrickson is going to, it's a jackknife swimmer and it's going to emerge very quickly to the surface. And you did that and you followed that.
Yep.
And then, you know, you went into your duns and you went into the knockdowns and all that other shit. But you took great pride in it. And so your fly boxes were kind of, in that day, were a little bit more like you, I did at least, in case Doc looked in my box and I was like, you know, there's 20 Hendrickson nymphs.
It's
and
then proof there's, that you know what you're talking about.
Unless you stole Doc's boxes, because then I'd be stumped too. But I mean, it was just kind of a pride thing. But what it does do, aside from that, if you have a, it's amazing how often young anglers come in and say to me, well, I don't know, you know, they don't really know the difference between a dun mayfly and a ant pattern, mm-hmm. right? Well, what makes it that? And so categorizing your flies, when you buy the fly, and you're hopefully there's somebody in that shop worth a shit that's going to sit there and say, do you know how to fish this fly? And, you know, this is a really great skater. You know, if you, do you skate this one? You know, okay, wait, it's a lot, and get a chance to learn, right? Mm-hmm. But categorization of flies, I think, really helps you start identifying when you, it's amazing when you have people walk in and they'll say, like, the water walkers and the circus peanuts are right by each other, right? And you say, well, you want that golden water walker. And they'll grab a circus peanut. Now, that's a, it's foam, but it's not. And you go, well, here. And you flip it over and you show them. I said, well, look at, see what you're looking at? And so you see the belly and you get it, you, and you learn something, right? And it's, yep. that's how we're, that's what shops are supposed to do for you. And so if you categorize those flies and you say golden stone, yellow Sally, right? Nocturnal stone. And you go through and you go, wow, if you start doing that process where you say, you know, we'll start, let's say salmon fly, golden stone, yellow Sally, nocturnal stone. Wait a minute, there's a rhythm to this. Oh, that's the when they hatch first, second, third, fourth. And that's a salmon fly. It looks like, they all look alike when you flip them over. What's this fuzzy piece of shit? Oh, it's an ant, right? Or whatever. Mm. And that subtle just categorizing things, it starts to, things start to add up for you. As you become a better angler, you go in and you say, got it. A spinner isn't this, or, you know, oh, that's why we do. And you have, you know, like I said, with the mayfly, you would start with your nymph, your emerger, your dun, your spinner, and it starts to follow suit. There's not that many bugs,
yeah.
right? There truly aren't that many bugs.
No, there aren't.
And so you can get an idea, which then, and that's going to be my rant. I just thought of it. When we go to the rant, I'm going to follow with this. But you, it gives you a chance to actually learn what the hell you're doing, mm-hmm. right? And it's, you can sit and say, man, did you hit that emergence? What do you mean?
You What's know, that?
Well,
what kind of streamer is that?
Yeah. Is that a new Charlie Craven pattern? No. And so it just, it helps you learn as you go, because it's really not that difficult.
Right.
I mean, and so, and that's what George and I were talking about, was that he refuses to just do those until they know everything about the emergence.
Cool.
And then when they're all done, they can tie a pretty gun.
Yeah.
But it really bugs him, because I called him out. I said, yeah, I saw that show where you said, when you look for something, it's shiny and gooey and shiny and gooey or something. I said, did you choke to death saying those words? And he's laughing. I love that guy. He's hilarious. He goes, yeah. He goes, you know, we all did it. He says, but I asked him, I said, when you go fish, what do you do? He goes, well, we did.
Yeah.
You know, it's not as productive, but it feels better.
Yep.
I said this is not going long, a freaking hour.
Yeah, of course. I remember having a light bulb moment in a shop in Seattle when it kind of like, it was when I started to understand that different flies were imitating different bugs, right? That they weren't just elk hair caddis and royal coachman, that there's more to the world than that, and stimulators. So I went in, I'm like, well, I think an elk hair caddis is a caddis. Oh, that's a type of bug, right?
Yeah.
And then I had a parachute Adams. That was the other one, right? And I'm like, okay, I think that this is a mayfly. And I remember talking to him. I go, okay, so I think I have my caddis over here, my mayfly's here. What's a stimulator? They go, well, it's a stimulator. I'm like, stimulating fish to rise? What is it? And they're like, really, a stimulator's, it's sort of androgynous, but it's also kind of a stonefly, right? Like a... Depending on the size, it's not a bad...
I think originally that's what it was, because it's a really somewhat close to a sofa pillow, which was the most common stonefly ever back in the day. And that was Randall's five or... No, I don't think he's like 5 or 7 years older than me. So he would have grown up in the same generation. Mm-hmm. And he's the guy that invented it. And so... I would say so. I don't know. Yeah. But some of them are just flat-ass attractors.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I figured out. So I remember organizing my box, and I was like, I've got caddis, I've got mayflies, I've got stoneflies, and then I have what you might call your general attractors, which is that royal coachman, the royal wolves. I mean, all these not exacting patterns. Mm-hmm. And then, so it's important to kind of break them into your bugs, and then, like Kelly talked about, break them into the stage of the bug, and then sizes. So
and there's more to this than ego. It's so important for you to know this because, you know, I daily have somebody tell me how full of shit I am when he say, well, we got, you know, you got fish for 3 hours and got 20 fish. And they're like, you're so full of shit. I said, okay, you're right. Well, most of the reason people don't catch fish, and particularly this river, but actually any river, is they don't understand that the bug goes in a certain depth at a certain time of day. And it doesn't do you any good to have a, you know, and knowing the hatches, it does, to know that the fish have ascended from the bottom and they followed the hatch and now it's 11:30 and every single bug in this river is within 12 inches of the surface, just hoovering fish, you know, boom, or not fish, but bugs, because all the freaking bugs are there. And you go in with your Pertagon and go below them, and you put on a, whatever it is, you know, put on a prince nymph and a whatever that is nowhere near what your fish are eating, and it's below your fish. If it's above the fish, you've got a slight chance. And I'm going
to
ask Howard about this.
It's hard to fish a Pertagon in the top.
Well, I'm going to ask Howard about this too, because I have a lot of theories, and I get pretty set in my way because I spent so much time looking at the bugs underwater and shit, and it, but one thing, the thing that really teaches you about fishing is catching fish or not catching fish, obviously, right? But when you're a guide, what really teaches you is your tip. If you get your ass kicked and somebody else doesn't, somebody's doing something better than you are, right? Mm-hmm. And to me, one of the things that I figured out really early in my life, fish seldom will go down for a fly. They will not, and I'm talking about bug-eating fish. They will not change their cadence that they follow. The bugs start on the bottom, they go to the top. Every day, 365 period, end of discussion. They don't go up and down, they go up. They just go up like this. They either, there's many ways they can do that. They can swim, they can, you know, pupating caddis don't necessarily always, some do. Some are pretty active pumps. They just pump, pump and go, 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 right to the top, right? Some just kind of hang and drift and go. It behooves you to know where those are. And it happens the same time almost every day on every emergence of every bug. They're all different, obviously, so there's different times. But here they come. And the one thing that I found for me in almost every style of river fishing was that a fish seldom will go below his head and start eating. And so you go out and you're throwing your patch rubber leg in the middle of July when there's, you know, or August, and there's no bugs out there. And that's because that's what everybody did on this river for the first 20 years I lived here. Everybody ran a patch river, and usually two, right? And so, great, you've got two flies below your fish that they haven't seen that bug in months. That doesn't mean you don't catch some. You will catch fish. But the person that goes down and puts one, say they put in a beadhead hare's ear, and they put in above that, you know, an emergent mayfly, you know, a Charlie's Juju or something like that, which is in the film, and it's got a reflective back because it's sunny on this river, and the fish is used to seeing a size 18 Juju betis or, you know, with a reflective back because the sun's on its ectoskeleton and it's shining, and you go, and the fly's in the right spot, and you catch every single fish it goes by. But you randomly catch the dumbass that's on the bottom still in your patch rubber leg, and, you know, it's just understanding where the hell the bugs are.
Right.
So back to that fly box thing, if you can start filling it by like how you want to fish it, because then you're not just out fishing. You are honing your skill, right?
Now you're getting it. You're playing the game.
Yeah, you're in the game now.
Yep.
You're not just standing there going, I'll throw this and see if it sticks, right? Mm-hmm. And all that organization as it goes up the ladder is what makes you do that. I talk about Steve a lot, Steve Skinny, and one of the best I've ever seen, he would flip a box open and it'd be the exact same fly in a different shade or a different, as the light's coming up and they're moving further. He was a technician at doing this, right? And that's why he was great. He still is great. But it was that detail orientation that, you know, orienting himself to have a box that had everything as it went up. And then you go to the next one, it's always the same. But it teaches you at 6 in the morning, it's different than it is at 4:30, you know? I mean, how often do you have people come in here and say, oh, I killed it yesterday morning, and it's 4:30 in the afternoon. So, yeah, probably won't work like it did yesterday
probably
morning.
Probably off the Pertagons.
Yeah, probably. Not on that, but they're probably up here a little bit. I don't know. You know, and so I'm almost like, what, are you trying to sell me some extra flies? Yeah, that's what we do.
Yeah.
We just try to screw you out of flies.
Yeah, I don't make commission. Yeah, I'm trying to sell you extra just to help Kelly out.
Yeah, no, we're trying to make you get so you don't buy the
this
flies.
This is a teaching thing, dude.
But it's just a thought process. Okay, we got to get off this. So it's going to be really short.
The one more thing, I was talking to two guys who are newer in here today. They're newer anglers. This is the first thing they said to me. And they said, so how do we know what to do when? I was like, I'm still working on it, dude. It takes a long time to figure out. I said, there's two ways to get better at fishing. One, spend a lot of time reading and learning online. Or that's how you become smart, and then you have a plan. Or you can be dumb and have no plan but be willing to change. And then you go out there and you just change flies, change weights, change depths, change everything you can, and then try to take note of when a change works.
Change with a purpose.
But if you don't understand anything, you don't have a purpose to change.
If you say, well, nothing's happening here, but that's not... I talked to two young guys on the river 3 nights ago, right? And they've been fishing all day, and they didn't do very well. And I'm sure they were trying to figure out, because I'm standing there with my vest, and they're, you know, hip young studs, and they're all sweaty because they've just hiked that mountainside to get back. They're going to their car. And they said they just didn't do anything, didn't catch anything. And I said, it's been a pretty good day, you know. And I'm standing there with my 8.5-foot Fenwick 1972 with its Fluger and my Peach, you know, fly line. And I can see the kid keeps looking over at this rod going, who's this? Guy might be homeless. Maybe he's feeding us a line of shit. And I said, and we just sat there. And they were really cool guys. They were really nice young men, you know, probably in their early 20s. And I said, well, where were you fishing? He goes, well, those guys over there are killing it. They got the hole. I said, nah, that's not how this works. This river's got, you know, thousands of
fish. There's 4,000 fish per mile up here. Every hole has fish.
And I said, well, you see the water they're sitting by? I said, that's what you were looking for. And I started explaining water to them. And the one kid said, he was a great listener. And once he stopped me, he goes, so you're saying? I said, yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. And you saw this light bulb. He says, well, if I didn't know, and they've been fishing for, I think he said 8 hours, or no, since 7 o'clock, and it was eight, it's 13 hours. And I said, and they'd both got one. And we were sitting there watching these kids with spinning rods throwing out with a bobber, and they're just hooking whatever the cast, right? I said, it's more about where you're fishing than it is anything else. And we're just talk. And he finally goes, so you're saying that it should have been not in front of and not. I said, see how that one guy's throwing way out in the middle? He's wasting his time. He's just throwing as far as he can. And the guy looks at his buddy. His buddy looks back at him. And he goes, I got to tell you, that's how. And the one guy said it 3 different times. If I'd have known that, I would have fished the river completely different. Light bulb moment, right? So it's like, boom, you got to know where it is. And the whole thing's about, that's life's journey, right? So organize your fly boxes.
Organize your fly boxes. Yeah, thanks for that question. Sorry we didn't get to it last week. It's probably my fault. I'll blame Kelly.
Of course.
Kelly's fault. All right, this next question comes from Moly, M-U-1-1-Y. Let's go with Moly. Says he's 21, from Ohio. Watched a rod review from us and bought his first fly rod. Always wanted to try fly fishing, but never got around to it. You know, he says, Ohio is nothing like Colorado or Montana, but he loves it nonetheless. Says he had one question. Be what advice do you have for young anglers getting into fly fishing, and what would be some of the bare necessities you need to start out? So I just talked to the kid in here today, Connor, who's working for a ranch just up the road, and he's brand new to fly fishing. He said he just bought a kit rod for someone in West Yellowstone, and he said, I've got a rod, I've got some flies, I've got some hoppers, that's what I want to do. What else do I need to fish? So I thought it might be a good exercise, and you know, the folks who have been fishing for a long time, this probably won't be as interesting. But in terms of bare necessities, maybe you're taking somebody out, taking them fishing. I brought over a couple of things that I helped Connor out with. One, we really talk a lot about kit rods. Kelly loves them. He converted me. Not that I was ever a big expensive fly rod guy, but I love kit rods. There's a Lampson kit that I've been trying to throw fly lines with out in the parking lot. Kyler and I have been doing that. It's a great stick.
The Cortland guides are spectacular.
They're great. The Echo stuff's good.
That's the lift. The Traverse is the next step up.
I threw salmon flies on that Cortland one you had in the boat that day.
I love that.
It turned over great. I mean, it's
a 6-weight, and it flexes like they're supposed to. But that whole series, and the same with the Echoes, all good. I think the point is you don't have to go spend a fortune. It's kind of the thing that's kept so many people out of our sport. One, our arrogant attitude, and two, the price of this shit's ridiculous, right?
Yep.
And so...
So this is, I think, $190 rod reel line.
Yeah.
You could spend $1,500 easily on that stuff.
Easy.
And this is $190, I think. $170, I can't remember. I'll link it to our website. All the stuff is on slidein.com. By the way, we're not trying to sell you stuff, but if you need to buy it and you want to support us, great. In terms of bare necessities, I set Connor up with 7.5-foot 3X leader on this river. That's great. Certain other rivers, it might be different. So go into your local fly shop for advice on that. I got 3 and 4X tippet spools. And what I actually forgot, I got him tippet rings too because he said he didn't know a knot to connect line to line. Tippet rings are great for that. And then floating. And then a box of flies, which... You don't even need to buy a box when you're starting out. It helps for organization.
Half the guys here run off pucks.
Pucks. I run pucks. I am not the most organized individual. That's probably why I forget the last guy's question for 2 weeks. I run a ton of pucks. And I have my, like I said, reservoirs of flies. What's that?
I think they are a plague.
Pucks?
They end up in my boat everywhere.
Oh, yeah, totally. No, it's the worst. It's not organized at all. But if you're just starting out... And you're very cost conscious.
Yeah.
You don't need to buy a box the first day you go. Most fly shops have pucks. You can get your 8-10 flies in here and go out and start. Eventually you want organization and boxes and everything, but this is a cost cutting technique if you need it. So
you forgot one.
What did I forget over there? Nippers. Nippers are very important. And we've got them, I think these are $8 or something. So
nippers,
you can spend $300 on
them. And you can go buy a pair of fingernail clippers and they work just fine. Yep. And they're 60 cents sometimes. But, you don't have a pair of Hemos.
I don't, because I don't think they're an absolute essential. I think that's a second step to me.
I don't lose as many flies trying to, I drop fish with flies in them all the time.
Yeah, break them off.
Yeah, and so the Hemos help. But the point is, depends. The fly floating's not important if you don't fish
dries.
Yep. You're going to go out and start nymph fishing, probably how most people do here. You don't need that. And you would need split shot instead of...
Right.
Unless you're just a Perdigon cat, then you don't need any of it. But that's a... People overthink this a lot. Like you see people with... Geez, you know, you see people with... Everything known to man, they walk out in the shop. They've got every accessory and every... And then you'll see somebody that... Like when I was down talking to those kids.
Yep.
They're looking at me going, who is this guy?
Okay, so some guy...
This guy doesn't have any cool shit.
one of these meme accounts on Instagram, and I wish I could give them credit because they just make me laugh. There's a ton of them out there. But he did a series of like... ranking the people you see in fly fishing by how dangerous they really are. And, you know, it's like the cat who shows up in the SUV who gets out with all the brand new Orvis shit with the tags still on. Probably not a threat.
I've personally never seen that, but...
Well, we've got a couple. On. Yeah, yeah, not the tags on. That's too... Yeah, but that person might not be that much of a threat. I'm probably mixing up two things, but this is like, you know, you pull into a fishing spot and you see the car and you see the person. It's like, should I go fish there? Did they just catch all the fish? So when you see the total
gear... What happens when you see Dan Green or Jeremy?
So that's the...
Two hippies.
That's the last personality. You see a dude with long hair, wearing Chacos, a single puck of flies.
A tank top.
And Dan Green's fishing.
He's got a fiberglass something that he
found. Oh, he's got an 80s fiberglass rod that's splitting apart.
Yeah, and he just hooked every fish in that river.
And the biggest ones, too. Yeah, so oftentimes it's sort of an inverse relationship between how much gear you have and how
I used to watch that
really
in the store with people when Jeremy was younger yet.
Yep.
And he had all that hair and he's, you know, not real assertive in those days. And they would like brush him off, right? I'm like, kid knows more than anybody you've ever met in your life.
He's forgotten more than you've ever known. Yeah.
But it's that thing where, you know,
gotta look the part.
Or the other one that used to always happen was Jeremy, and you know, those guys, you all fish more than I do nowadays. And they would get done, tell them every single thing, absolutely perfect. And then they'd look and go, what do you think? They'd look at me and go, I think I'd listen to the guy that fishes 200 days a year.
That happened on a much smaller scale. That happened with me in here today. I've been gone for the last week. I was in Seattle and other places. I haven't fished Madison in a week. And the guy comes in, you know, and I see him talking with Kyler for a while, who is a fishy cat.
Yeah.
By the way, his dad texted him saying, how come whenever Kelly and Braden talk about you on the podcast, it's always that skinny little prick? Or
I don't say that. You do.
You do. Yeah, no.
Yeah, I call everybody skinny little prick.
No, you call it, yeah, whatever. But no, we love you, Kyler. Very fishy guy. Kyler's dad, love him.
I only call him a skinny little prick when I see one of his flies he just did better than mine. Again.
That was the context.
Again.
It's always complimentary, yes. And then we take away because we don't want to promote. But Kyler talks to this guy for a while, helps him pick out some flies, and then, you know, he recognized me from the podcast, so he goes, oh, hey, you know, blah, blah, love the podcast, whatever. What do you think of these flies? Shows them to me. I go, dude, I got to be honest. Listen to him. He's fished every night in the last week. He really knows what's going
on. Or morning, or day, or day off every.
Yeah, so, you know,
same
thing.
I've said it for a million years, fish with young guys or gals. Could be creepy.
All right, so let's do we forgot to do what's Kelly pissed about. Why don't we jump into that?
AI generation of fishing things.
What?
AI fishing
like
apps
video
of all
games
sorts.
Or what?
No. For I was watching it on this deep sea thing, but it really worries me, and I'm thankful to no end that it's not here yet in our business. Mm-hmm. But really scares me about this shit. They're talking about, it was stupid what they were talking about. They're going to go harvest the world or whatever. I forget what it was on. And you still have limits and shit like that. But that doesn't bother me. If you want to go catch your limit and get off there, that's great. Just curious with this AI shit. When does it end? Like, okay, so, and I'm even kind of anti- foreign imagery for the bass stuff and whatnot.
So anti like technology and fishing.
In particular, I can just see that in 5 years from now, you can go to the river because it's going to be exactly what we just talked about in reverse. Yeah. You go to the river and you plug in, you know, just, you don't even have to plug anything in. You walk to the river and the phone's already doing it for you. Barometric pressure's this, the wind's this, you know, the humidity's this, the sunlight's this. And historically speaking, of all the data points we've collected off those phones over the last, you know, 5 years, it is imperative that you throw on 4X tippet, you throw it 13 degrees upstream, you put on a 3.5 bead, and you follow it with a 2.0, and you want this one to be green and this one to be brown. What the fuck? You're only reeling goddamn fish in. When is it going to be to the point where you say to yourself, you know, maybe you should, I mean, at what point do you just sit and reel fish in
have
where you don't
any
have
pride?
You haven't done a thing to figure out how to fish it. something's probably going to be walking for you by then. You know, you'll have your little aids on your legs so you can walk on the river. But at what point don't you just, you know, does it just suck all your learning ability out of your the desire to learn? Why don't you just go get them freaking goggles, put them on, sit on your mom's couch and reel fish in on the couch? Because you're going to have everything else.
I did that.
With the glass thing?
No. When I was like maybe 10 or 12 years old, I got a Nintendo Wii and I had the Rapala game. And
When's it going to be that?
I'll tell you, the real thing's better.
Well, the real thing is actually, at what point have you just siphoned your freaking brain out of your head? And then you can go home and have your robotic girlfriend jerk your rod. And I mean, it's ridiculous at this point. Where do you, I'm watching this and they're like wide open. They're just, they don't, there's no thinking. You just plugged it in and you went 4 miles out into the ocean and it stops. It went around all obstacles. You know, so they brought everything into it. And then it's monitoring the wind and the currents and everything in it and bait balls. Mm-hmm. So the boat just stops and you throw your lines over the edge.
And boom, there's a fish.
Boom, here you go, yeah. Right? Fish on.
Where's the skill in that?
Well, that's the point. It's just like, I watch it and I keep all this shit about people saying, oh, there was another thing a guy wrote in I wanted to talk about too. Remind me of that on the... It was not. It was a comment on the royalty thing, but they said, you know, they just stop and they catch the fish, and that was the concern. Well, they're going to catch all the fish. Well, you still only get five, So whether it takes you 10 hours, you know, or it takes you 20 minutes, who cares, right? But it just bothers me that to think, you know, I remember somebody saying something about guiding where you would have. It would be a virtual guide, you know. So now you're just walking down there. So how many more ways can you take the freaking human element out of life before you do have your girlfriend that's a robot playing with you, because you can't talk to anybody? You know, it's like, where's the human part of learning going with this shit? Where, I mean, I was watching those kids, and I love this bass thing, and I love these new anglers, but I watched them fishing without fishing. They're watching that screen.
They're watching TV.
So now we're catching, right?
That's no different than the Rapala game.
Yeah.
It just has a higher overhead to get into.
It really irritated me. Yeah. Because I'm really afraid that it'll end up in our business where I think it's that part where you just don't, I'm not saying that you should go get, I think it's great to go get a guide. And have human interaction. Have a shit guide. Then have a Johnny or a Scotty or a, you know, or a Nate.
Andrew,
or
Nathan, Andrew, Hunter, or whoever. Jordan. I mean, our
anybody
star,
where you go
our
out
staff,
and you,
Parker.
And you go out and you have a human interaction all day. You learn something. You know, maybe you learn something about yourself that your robot didn't do for you. And everything's great, right? Mm-hmm. But it just irritated me. And that was my rant. But there was a question a guy wrote in. He said something about the difference between... our industry, I wrote it down. Where's my phone? I wrote it down. It's, he said he didn't see, hold on 1 second. I sent a message to me.
Where's I think I have me? It.
Huh?
This isn't the one asking about the rusty trombone, was it? Different?
The guy asked about the rusty trombone. My fly preceded it was actually the Goldie was the first one that knocked it off. And then the rusty trombone, I think, was almost 3 years later. I have one more picture I want to show, because Schultz's kid, Dylan, sent me what a donkey rig does. Kid's 8.
Damn. Holy. This is as big as he is.
Yeah, no kidding. We'll show you this picture. I'll take a picture of it.
Holy,
but Dylan,
yeah, send that to
Mike
me.
Schultz is a son, and I was trying to remember what a donkey rig was and how to rig it, but he said this is how it works, but I don't remember what I did with that. But the guy said that he seldom sees bass guys talking like about winning a tournament with a Yamamoto jig. They just say, you know, they're fishing this. But I disagree with that. I really do. I didn't think it was an offensive comment that he said or anything like that. He said he was trying to make the point that maybe there's more ego, I think, in our business. And it's not true. It's not true at all. First and foremost, what we're talking about is I get paid a royalty for my intellectual property. So does Kevin Van Dam, and a lot more than I do. But if you watch Kevin's show, everything is brought to you by Strike King's KVD Square Bill, blah, 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 yeah. Right?
Sponsored content.
And then aside from that, if you notice, they have boat wraps. They get paid to use those lures and be seen with that, right? With that logo.
I think I found the comment. It's recent.
Yeah, just on the last one.
He says it's a random dude one. He says,
yes, that's it.
Random. I love hearing Kelly's take on fly design, especially when it comes to streamers. Not a real big streamer guy myself, often referring to them as furpaulas.
But it's I loved that word.
Yeah, furpaula is good.
I'm stealing that.
Yeah, that's good.
Just a furpaula fisherman.
But it's interesting that the fly tying world is becoming similar to the music world in how new songs nowadays are often accused of being ripoffs of older songs.
Agreed.
See, the same thing with fly design. I can put any random combination of materials on a hook and someone will find it similar to something Kelly, Charlie, Cheech, Barry, Blaine, Lance, etc. has tied. But then you look at the plastic worm makers. Guggen isn't accusing Z-Man of ripping them off because they also created a worm that is green pumpkin with red flake. I think it's because ego is a big part of the fly tying industry.
Okay, stop 1 second.
Yep.
First and foremost, Chinese companies ripping us off, and they're all doing the same thing.
And they've got very different copyright laws.
Well, I saw something that said the Rapala person, as an entity, said they lose $1 billion a year to intellectual property theft.
Probably.
And then you look at where the other ones are. So there's a little difference there. Okay, go ahead.
Tires want their name attached to patterns. The clouds are minnow and pads, rubber legs, Griffiths net. You don't hear bass fishermen say, I caught that with Gary Yamamoto's Senko. Don't get me wrong. I love fly fishing and fly tying. It is my passion. But the egos and personalities within the industry can be a bit much.
Okay, now, this is where I completely disagree with you. Nobody watches more shows bass fishing than I do. I think bass anglers are the best anglers in the world, period. They fish for the most money, so you're going to have the best talent, right? You don't just go win a bass tournament because you got more money. I've had several buddies that thought they were going to break into the world. They're rich, and they're going to go show those guys, and they haven't even placed in the top 10 in a local tournament.
Right.
There is a skill set that starts with those kids at 3, 4, 5 years old. You can now get there's high school tournaments that give you scholarships to college. There are collegiate scholarships for bass fishing. Right? These kids are incredible. And they're going to make millions of dollars. But you're wrong when you say, I never hear a guy say that. Watch Zona. They will never not tell you exactly what they do, what they caught it on. They're paid. I get paid when you buy a fly. I get a percentage of your fly. But when whoever is fishing, you know, if Kevin Van Dam was fishing a Strike King, he's going to say, and by the way, the number one selling lure ever was the Sexy Shad. When it came out, it was the biggest infomercial ever. I forget what, like 4.6 million units in a 24-hour window, right? And Kevin happened to fish that Sexy Shad throughout the entire series and then wins with it and then announces it'll be for sale at midnight that night.
Bang.
And becomes the big, I saw an infomercial commercial saying it was the biggest one ever on a 24-hour window zone. But if you watch Zona or anybody or any one of the bass guys you like, they will tell you when they land a fish, they will say that was a Yamamoto, a Senko, whatever they're going to say.
Yep.
They're going to say it because they're paid to say it. So but they don't get paid like Kevin gets paid, I'm sure, by lure because everything that says KVD or Bill Vance or whatever, Parker, I don't care who it is. But if they're in a tournament, they will say that every single time.
Yep.
And because they're paid to have that logo on their back, even most of them have their own lures, right? And so I remember when Hank Parker came out with a titanium spinner blade. Jeez, that's all I heard. Hank Parker's spinner hit titanium over and over and over and over. Well, he got a royalty on every one of those. I don't say, I wish I could get a, you know, I wish I got that numbers. That would be very cool.
That'd
I mean,
be great.
I would like to have one fly that sold 7 million in a season. That would be okay. We'd have, we'd have a better set.
Yeah, and a better camera guy too. Shit. Yeah,
like watching the Van Dam experience. I love Kevin. Kevin, I loved watching him his whole career. He's from Michigan, and I followed him forever. But he's fishing with Luke Bryant on Luke's private lakes, right? And then he's fishing with all the pros and blah, 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 all the guys from the Detroit Lions and
all
and
you got
like
is
that.
Bill Erdman.
Huh? Yeah. And you. And Johnny.
Ugh.
So that was a double tough. Rant. Not a rant. I just wanted to clarify. And I thought it was it's a legit thing, but I disagree with the fact they don't call that out.
Let's wrap up. Band of the week.
Lucinda Williams.
Lucinda Williams. I'm going with...
She's a skanky chick. I love her. What a tramp.
A month from today, the day we're filming this, I will be at the Billy Strings concert in Bozeman.
I thought you already said him.
No, I haven't. Love Strings. Haven't seen Strings live yet. It'll be the first time. It's inside. I know everybody told me don't do it. It's inside.
Oh,
whatever. I haven't
I
seen
have
him. I'm excited.
Thing. I have one more thing before we go. I just thought about this. This book just came out. It's from IFFF, International Federation of Fly Fishers and Tires and all that. This book, I've just got it. It's incredible. Go to FFF or to the IFFF website, and you will see this is, I hate this thing going crazy here. Hold on.
This is a great
inside. This is a great ad. I was trying to get it. They don't want to crack all the spines. It is full, the best tires in the world. Absolutely. And it's mostly a tips book, right? It's got, there's just a bunch of, this is an incredible, in particular for somebody who's in that mid-level of tying. This is an incredible resource. It's got some of the greatest tires ever. If you don't know about IFFF, if you do know about catch and release, you should understand, if nothing else, that Lee Wolf, I believe, is one of the founders of this. He's the godfather of, I think, of catch and release. But there are so many great tires in this book. And if you're a club person, IFFF is really, it's a grassroots club. It's huge. It's international, obviously. But I've been a member of this thing, I don't know, since the 70s, I'm sure. Maybe mid-80s, somewhere in there. But incredible book, incredible resource. Everybody worth their salt in the business is in this book. So take a look at it. I don't know what it is. I think it's like $45 or something, but well worth. Should be on every fly tires. Should be on every fly tires desk. In particular, that mid-level tire where you're just trying to hone stuff, right?
Yep. Refine.
Just refine everything out. But it's a really good book. It's not by anybody because there's, I don't know how many authors I should know that, how many contributors there were, but I'm thinking it's probably in the 20-30 something.
Are you in that book?
Very small, very little.
That means it's reputable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They called me right at the very end. No, they didn't. They called me really. I said, I don't. A lot of those guys like Skip and guys like Morris and the guys that are just so really want to write a lot and they're so detail oriented. And I said, start your thread here, start your thread there.
Yeah, there you go.
There's guys that just articulate it much better than I do. So, and I get a bajillion videos you can watch, so, and they're all the same. So start your thread here, end your thread here. And then I did this thing about starting your thread, and I used this pretty heavy thread. It looks like shit.
Well, nice.
I should have used really fine thread. I didn't know they were going to blow the picture up. You know, just how to start. Like I just said things like how to have even heads every time or set your tails in the same spot. Very rudimentary.
Yeah.
But knowing that everybody in the industry out there, all those guys that are super techs are going to, they'll be warm
piece. Deep.
Oh, yeah. And it's really cool to look. But anyway, it's a phenomenal book. I've just got it, and I've been scanning through it, and I'm sure you'll love it.
Boom.
And that's all we got for
episode 35.
That's all, folks.